This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. From the late 1970s to the early 1990s, Cape Coral Hospital was known across southwest Florida for its excellent care. But it hit a rough patch of corruption and financial struggles in the mid-90s that culminated in an FBI investigation. Lee Memorial Health System bought the community hospital in 1996, and in the intervening years, it's been transformed into an award-winning model of healthcare and business excellence. But that did not happen by accident. Later this hour, we'll meet the authors of the new book, Mindful Healthcare, to learn more about the process behind that transformation. But first, this Thursday is the 76th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor that killed more than 2,000 members of the U.S. military and injured another 1,000. The assault on our Navy base on the Hawaiian island of Oahu launched the United States into the Second World War for 4 years of active combat, killing more than 500,000 Americans. Many years and miles away here in southwest Florida, Pearl Harbor Day is being observed on the campus of Ave Maria School of Law, which is hosting its second annual Veterans Memorial Celebration. Lieutenant General Richard Natonski will be the guest speaker at the event. He's the newest member of the Ave Maria Law Board of Governors and spent nearly 4 decades in the U.S. Marine Corps. He joins us now by phone. Thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome, Julie.
We're also joined by the Ave Maria Law School's Dean Kevin Seepley, who has more than 2 decades of service under his belt in the U.S. Army and the National Guard. Thanks for coming in, Kevin.
Thank you, Julie.
We're talking about Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day on the campus of Ave Maria School of Law. You can join the conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag of GCL. So you're both veterans. So first off, I'd like to thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Sincerely. We can begin by hearing a bit about each of your times in the military. I'd like to start with you, Lieutenant General Richard Natonski. How about you?
Well, I'm from Connecticut, but I came into the Marine Corps in 1973, caught the tail end of the Vietnam War, and through the next 37 years had an opportunity to serve in lots of places around the world, to include 2 tours in Iraq. I retired in 2010, and I continue to mentor for the Marine Corps to this day.
And Kevin, how about your military career?
I spent 22 and a half years in the Army, in the Army National Guard. So I came in through ROTC from Northern Kentucky University. I was initially a helicopter pilot, and then the Army sent me to law school under what they call the FLEP program. Then I spent the next 15 years as a JAG officer, and including being the legal advisor to the Wyoming Adjutant General. And I ended up at NORAD NORTHCOM for my last assignment.
So let's turn now to the upcoming celebration. What's happening at this event, Kevin?
So last year we decided to dedicate our library to veterans, and we renamed it the Veterans Memorial Law Library. It was the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor attack, and we wanted to really – our goal is to become the choice law school for veterans. And so the library is the centerpiece of the campus. It's where the students gather. It's probably the most iconic building on our campus. And so if we were going to honor veterans, we thought the best way to do that would be to name the library Veterans Memorial Law Library. And then as you walk in the library, we also made a wall of honor for veterans where individuals can honor a veteran if they want. $2,500. You can put a veteran's name on our wall. And then we actually film either the family member or the veteran about the veteran's service. And we put it on a kiosk there. So when you walk in, you can punch the veteran's name and hear about the veteran's life story.
Kind of a multimedia thing, too.
Yes, absolutely. And then we'll also put it on our website. So if you have family members in California that want to listen to the interview, they can do that as well. And so we'll have, again, this is our second celebration or that is event honoring the attack on Pearl Harbor. We're going to have John Gideon, who's 97 years old. He was in the Navy and he was actually a survivor of Pearl Harbor. And we're going to give him an award at the event. We'll have the Ladies of Liberty. They're a singing group. They come in with the outfits of the air and they sing the 1940s type of music. It's actually they're unbelievable. They're very, very good. And we'll have the Collier County Sheriff's Office be the color guard, and then, of course, General Natonski will give some words of wisdom to the crowd, and also General Mike Coyne will also be our MC.
Great. And Lieutenant General Richard Natonski, he kind of alluded to your speaking engagement. Can you give us a little preview without giving away the whole speech?
Yeah, well, one, I want to thank the veterans. It's not just the Pearl Harbor veterans, but all of those who've served either in peace and war. And Pearl Harbor was, as we know, the day of infamy, but 16 years ago we had another one of those days on 9/11, and we had a similar response amongst our young men and women, be it our paper boys, lawn mowers, baggers at the grocery store, boy or girl scouts. There was an influx of young men and women that came into the service, and now we've been at war for 16 years straight, whether it's been in Iraq or Afghanistan or today in Syria, Africa. We've got troops on alert in the Pacific, but I want to thank the veterans for all they have done to preserve the freedoms we enjoy in this country. I also want to thank the families, because although only 1% of our population have ever served in the military, our families bear quite a burden when they go off and see their loved ones go into harm's way, and they deserve our thanks as well. So I'm going to talk about that, as well as some of the threats we face as a nation today. So that's a quick summary.
What are you talking about, military threats or other internal threats?
I'm going to talk primarily about the threats we face militarily. That's my area of expertise, I would say. So, you know, it's a tougher threat. We're facing greater threats today than I think we have ever faced in our history. You know, we've been fighting wars against, I guess, second-rate type forces in Afghanistan and Iraq, but we're facing near-peer competitors today with capabilities that are just as strong as the capabilities we have as a nation. And we have not been resourcing our armed forces and modernizing, because we're worn down after 16 years of war.
Yeah. And this is a kind of a war of a different character that we're looking at the horizon.
We face a near-peer competitor has capabilities that we haven't faced on the battlefield since probably the Korean War. And I'm talking about enemy aircraft, electronic warfare, cyber warfare. These are capabilities that we see in North Korea, the threat of nuclear war. These are threats we've not faced in many, many years. And we have to be able to address the entire spectrum of fighting, whether it's fighting terrorism or near-peer competitors like we see with the Russians or the Chinese, the North Koreans or the Iranians.
As a veteran, how do you look at these types of developments? I mean, you've been there, you've been fighting, you've been there, you've been to tours in Iraq, I think you mentioned, correct?
I have.
So you're looking at this as something that's a little bit different. How do you view something like this and these types of developments that are, you know, coming up in the news with great regularity?
I view it, it's scary. In Iraq and in Afghanistan, we didn't face some of the threats that the armed forces are facing today. You know, we see it daily with the cyber attacks across the realm of our country, whether it's potential attacks against infrastructure, against movie theaters or movie organizations, fiscal institutions. The impact of just that, and then I throw out the fact that how many people even have a map in their car today? We all depend on global positioning system or navigation system. Well, we have adversaries that can take that capability away from us, and we've become so dependent on it that sometimes, although technology is what we call a force enabler, it's also a vulnerability from an adversary that can take out those types of capabilities.
It definitely can. And then turning now to Kevin, we're talking about a Pearl Harbor Day celebration, which was an event that happened at a very different point in time. However, it was a very huge event that led to our getting involved in World War II. Do you find any kind of, I don't know, parallels that you can draw between modern day situations and the situations that we were dealing with in the past?
Well, obviously, Pearl Harbor is iconic in that it brought the United States into World War II, and it would be a very different world today if the United States didn't enter in World War II. So as bad as an event that that was, it really was a fortunate event for world history. You can imagine if the Nazis and the Japanese underneath the leadership at the time were in charge of the world since, 1940s. So, that is obviously a very iconic event. I hope that we don't face any type of day that's similar to that in the future against North Korea. Obviously, General Natonsky is talking about how we need to prepare our military, and it needs to be an emphasis. We need to take it serious, and we want to secure freedom for the world for as long as we can.
So what made you want to celebrate the Pearl Harbor Day in the first place 1 year ago?
Well, there was a lot going on Veterans Day, and we thought that the next most important day that we could honor veterans, even though it's, because it's focuses on Pearl Harbor, it's not as broad as General Natonsky said that we want to honor all veterans, and that is true. But, my father fought in the Pacific, and his brother was killed over Germany in B-24. And so growing up, Pearl Harbor Day was always a day that my family honored and prayed together. And so it was a day that I thought would be very good for us to rename the law library. And because we did it last year, we thought, well, this is something we want to do each and every year. To when we're trying to attract veterans to our campus, we need to make it a place twofold. One, that honors the veterans that are there, but also to bring the community in and just honor veterans across the nation. And the more we can do that, the more the veterans will feel at home at our campus. Our campus will become known as a law school that stands up when a national anthem is being played, honors our flag, commits to service. And we're trying to attract veterans because really, I'd like to make them a catalyst for our school to really get over a tipping point of the amount of veterans on our campus, because we want to bring in students that have maturity, integrity, that are hardworking, and that will serve the community and the nation, to serve something beyond just themselves. And we know veterans embody all those things. And if we could get more and more veterans on our campus that have those characteristics, then it will change the ethos and the character of the campus as a whole.
It sounds like an admirable goal. How many veterans percentage-wise do you have now?
We have just under 250 students, and we have 21 veterans, so we're just under 10%. Hopefully, we can double that this next year, and if we can get up to a percentage where we're about 25-30% veterans, I think that would be a really nice place to be.
Do you see a big difference between veteran students that have served and then students that have not?
Well, they certainly come in, like I said, with a level of maturity. They've handled a lot of stress. Law school is extremely stressful, and you've got to balance all of the things that life brings you in an intense period of study. And so what I do see with them is the ability to keep a little bit of balance, to keep a steady hand. They've already gone through those periods of times where maybe they, kind of lost their mind for, because of stress. And students that are coming out of undergraduate, obviously it depends on the student, but typically they'll go through some very stressful times. And so it's nice to have the veterans there and give them some perspective. I also like the veterans there to show them, like I said, about service, about trying to do something that's greater than yourselves. And a lot of people talk about that, but the veterans have actually done it.
That's funny how you say the undergraduate students may feel like they've experienced stress, but a veteran can say, well, let me just tell you something about stress.
That's right, especially when you get the ones that, were in combat.
Exactly. So this is going to be the first year that you're giving out the Heroes Awards, and I think you alluded to it earlier. It's a surprise to the recipients, but you've given us the all clear to talk about one, Mr. John Gideon. Can you tell me a little bit more about his story?
Well, I actually have not met Mr. Gideon, so I'm looking forward to meeting him on Thursday. I understand he's a Pearl Harbor survivor. I think he's getting honored in another event earlier on Thursday as well. He's 97 years old, and I'm looking forward to meeting him.
I believe I talked to him a year ago.
Did you? Okay.
Around Pearl Harbor Day. And he's a colorful individual. We are talking about Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day on the campus of Ave Maria School of Law. You can join this conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So, Lieutenant General Richard Natonsky, you are the newest member of the Ave Law Board of Governors. Why did you decide to get involved with the school?
I am, and I was approached by Mr. Tom Monahan, who was a founder of Domino's Pizza, who had been in the Marine Corps in the late 1950s, before he founded Domino's Pizza, and I had a strong Catholic background, and I was approached by him. I think he was looking for someone who had been in the Marine Corps, who was also Catholic, and shared his values. And he asked me if I would be on the board. It took a lot of thought, but I believe in the philosophy of the school. They really want to create an environment where the students feel free to practice their faith as well as become better skilled lawyers. So I want to be part of that process. And I'm retired now, although I still do some things here and there. I thought I want to give back. So when he asked, I had the opportunity. I attended one board meeting in September, but this will be my first visit down to Naples, Florida. So it's supposed to get real cold up here in Virginia tonight, so I'm looking forward to getting down in Florida, where I believe it's in the 80s.
Yes, it is. Right, it's really – the weather right now is pretty much perfect. This is why we live here.
It is.
Not in August. That is not why we live here, this kind of weather.
You don't want to be here this evening. It's going to rain, and the front's coming through, and it's going to drop into the 30s. So I'm looking forward to coming down to Florida.
Well, I wanted to ask you another quick question. When you think about a school of law and military veterans, do you feel like they kind of go hand in hand? Do you feel that men and women who have done service in the military may kind of find a natural progression to study something like law?
Well, as Dean Seepley said, veterans do bring a certain maturity and discipline, and I think that's important as a lawyer. I served with a lot of lawyers during the course of my career, and I found that in combat, two of the most important people I had on my staff were my lawyer and my public affairs officer, because they are so important to the entire process. And I think veterans can really have an impact. As we see more and more veterans now running for Congress, you know, at one time after World War II, we had the greatest generation that populated Congress, and then it has dropped off. But with having been at war and so many veterans coming out now and running for office, I think it's a good thing. And I think having veterans in the law profession is also an advantage for our country.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask Dean Seepley the same kind of question. Do you feel that correlation between law and helping to sort things out and having pretty precise rules, maybe a little bit less gray area than some other disciplines, perhaps?
Well, why I think it's important to bring veterans into the law profession is because so much of our country depends on lawyers. Whether we like it or not, they're overrepresented in every branch of government, at every level of government. They're leaders in the community. And so when you bring veterans into the education of law, they're naturally going to go into the profession of law, and that leads into leadership in the community and the governance of our society. And they have put their lives on the line for our country. There's no better individuals to then put the governance of our country into their hands. They understand what it means to send men and women into war. They don't take that, very lightly. And when they're talking about freedom, they know what the real cost is. And so I think it's a natural fit. And again, I keep coming back to the discipline that they have. I mean, when you talk to Tom Monahan, he was a very successful individual, and invariably when you're in a conversation with him, he'll go back to when he was a Marine, and that's where it started. And the things that he learned about discipline, about hard work, about serving something greater than himself, that all came to fruition when he was in a Marine Corps. And so that's why I think it's a natural fit.
And another thing, law school is not cheap, but are there scholarships or is there funding available that's going to help veteran students through the Yellow Ribbon program?
Yes. So we do an awful lot on our campus. One thing is the scholarship program. So we're involved in the Yellow Ribbon program, and we have an unlimited amount of Yellow Ribbon scholarships that we'll give. And what that means is the federal government pays for basically half, up to half tuition, as long as we match it. And we do not put a cap on it, so we match it. And again, we'll do as many as we can. And so essentially, generally, every veteran can come to our school for free. Now, obviously, they need to get in, and that is take the LSAT, have an undergraduate GPA, and get admitted into our school. But if they're able to get admitted, then they can attend for free. They still have to do living expenses. But in addition to that, our campus is uniquely positioned for disabled veterans. We're contiguous to an elementary school, Vineyards Elementary, which is an excellent school. And, of course, there's a county park right behind that. We have on residents. We have housing on campus. About a third of our students live on campus. We have two high rises, but we also have 8 villas that are duplexes that are single story. And then we have accessibility all classrooms. So if
that might also be a little bit more family friendly too, because if you're talking about a veteran who has served, who has gotten an undergraduate degree, he may already have a family too.
Absolutely.
In fact,
when I'm going to Mass in the morning, many times I'm passing families that are taking their kids to school and then they're going to class. So it's a very nice environment, a very family environment. We have veterans parking. We have a veteran resource center in our library. So we're trying to do more and more for the veterans and make it a place that's it's a good place to go to law school for veterans.
So it kind of makes sense why Ave Law earned the 2017 Military Friendly School designation by Victory Media.
That correct.
Kind
yes.
of makes sense.
Yes.
And you alluded to it a little bit earlier. Part of Thursday's event is launching of the Veteran Legacies at Ave Law Project. It's a video and multimedia series again, correct?
Yes. And basically we have, I mentioned, we'll film anybody that puts a veteran's name on our Wall of Honor. But in addition to that, any veteran or not even a veteran, but a family member of a veteran, if they want the story of their veteran to endure, then when we have time, we will film them about 10 minutes to capture the veteran's story and actually house that on our website. And first, we're starting off with all the veterans that we have in our student body and in the faculty and in the staff. And then after that, we'll start reaching out to the community.
This could be useful also for people who have, veteran relatives who were in World War II or
yes.
who may be deceased, but they still want to tell the stories. I remember my grandpa telling me about how he served in the Pacific. I mean, those kinds of stories. And that can preserve the story, even though perhaps the veteran has already passed.
Right. And Austin Robbie, who initially came with me to the idea of doing this because, there is a program where we interview the veterans, but it has to be the veteran. It's got to be a 30-minute interview, and then you send it up to the Library of Congress. And as he's doing that project, he talks to a lot of family members where the veteran has passed away, and they would like to tell the story about their family member that served. And there really is just no place for that to occur, to sit down, capture the story, and put it in a place that will always be there. And that's what we're going to provide at Ave Law.
And we've also talked about this on the show a number of times to make sure now that everybody has these cell phones that have video capabilities, it's not a bad idea to just get video and audio of your loved ones that are older, telling their stories. Is there any ability for people to, if they can't get there physically to tell the story with your video team, can they submit things?
That's something I'll have to ask my IT person, but I'll look into that. I don't know, because the way we're doing it right now is we do bring them physically on campus.
Yeah.
We have a very good audio-visual technician who, just does an excellent job.
I'm sure your video and audio guy is going, oh, no, please
yeah,
do not.
And that's why I don't want to commit.
We don't want to say yes to that. You're getting all these terrible videos with shaking and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really it sounds like such an interesting project. And you said it's available online, too, for people to see some of these stories?
Yes. Well, actually, we're just kicking this off on December 7th. So we have a couple that have already been done. They'll be on our kiosk. We're putting them online. Right now, we're just focusing on the students that are veterans on our campus. And after we interview all our students, then we'll expand out to the community.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. I want to thank our guests again, Ave Maria School of Law Dean Kevin Sapley and also Lieutenant General Richard Natonsky. Thank you both for talking with me about this event. And it's coming up this week, correct?
Yes. December 7th at 5 o'clock on our campus. Thanks, Julie.
All right. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, the authors behind the new book, Mindful Healthcare, explain the process behind the transformation of Cape Coral Hospital from the struggling institution it was in the 1990s to the model for healthcare excellence it is today. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU.